Bem-vindos e bem-vindas ao Antes Tech do que Nunca, podcast que ajuda você a lidar com a transformação digital na prática. E hoje a gente está aqui mais uma vez no Expo Center Norte, no Universo TOTVS 2025, uma das maiores e mais legais conferências de tecnologia, muita programação e gente bacana passando por aqui, e a gente com esse estúdio trazendo o melhor da programação, coisas legais que estão por aí. E hoje a gente tem a honra de receber e fazer uma entrevista com um dos grandes futuristas do momento, que passou aí pelas conferências internacionais e tem ganhado muita notoriedade no mundo, e estava aqui pelo palco do Universo TOTVS e vem conversar com a gente. Como ele não fala português, eu vou conduzir esse episódio em inglês, mas convido todos vocês para seguirem essa conversa, colocarem aí ferramentas automáticas, processos para quem não fala a língua poder acompanhar. Então, passo aqui para o inglês e tenho a honra de apresentar o Neil Redding, futurista e um grande arquiteto de inovação, é como ele se intitula. So, super nice to have you here, Neil.
Muito obrigado. You know, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
So, your topic that you've been like discussing around conference and even here in, at Universo TOTVS was a lot about AI and the agents in AI and how we should not think about this as something that is in the future, but is happening right now. So what exactly you are talking about and what is this moment that we are facing?
Yeah, sure. So I call my talk here today, the near future of business with AI agents. And, you know, I'll step back and say for a minute, you know, I'm a near futurist. I describe myself as a near futurist because I'm really focused on not what's coming, you know, at some future time or, you know, a year or 5 years from now, but really what's emerging now, like new possibilities. And there's so many of these that are showing up as new possibilities every week, actually, especially in AI, and every month. And so connecting these new possibilities with practical value for brands and businesses that I speak with and that I work with. So that's near futurism. Where we are in this moment with AI is, you know, we've had a couple years, maybe most of us, maybe 2.5 years, right, since ChatGPT first showed up. It's amazing that it's only been 2.5 years, right, because most of us are using it quite often. But we've been prompting, you know, typing text or sometimes speaking to these AIs, and we have that relationship with the AI where it just kind of waits for us to prompt it with something. But we're emerging into this new phase of AI's development or evolution, as I describe it, where AI is starting to participate like this conversation in a way, or like we have coworkers in our teams, in our businesses, where we participate, we collaborate, we work together, and AI is becoming more of a partner, right? More of something that kind of works with us that can actually, you can start to delegate to it, give it an assignment, you know, have it go off and figure out how to get something done and come back and give you a result or a report or, you know, whatever the research is that it might do. And soon it'll be able to actually do things in the physical world, you know? And so this evolution of AI into more of an active role is really what my talk is about, and what that shift is going to be even more kind of powerful and profound and disruptive, right, than AIs that we can prompt, you know, have been so far. So that's what I'm really helping people understand and to understand and like how to think about this technology. What are the best mental models? What are the best kind of narratives? And that's what we really focus on in my talk.
And how can you like use that in this way that you are saying that's like a partner, it's a conversation? Because when you listen that sometimes looks like something easy, but when you go there, it's not everyone who knows what exactly is this process that you can like use in a way that's kind of not like replacing you, but kind of giving you more histories, data or whatever it is. So what is like that advice that you can have to someone that is like starting experimenting or thinking about it?
Yes. So I gave, you know, I show a few examples in my talk of how we can have AI start to participate in the work that we do. Again, I start out talking about prompting because we all understand what that is. But there is this new capability or type of capability that these AI tools have, whether it's Claude or ChatGPT or Gemini or even some others, where you can actually either tell it to do something at a particular time, like ChatGPT's tasks has this ability, And I gave the example, you know, as a simple example of every morning at 8 a.m., you know, send me, you know, take everything you know about me and my work, my ideas, what's my agenda, what are my plans for the year, and send me an idea every morning at 8 a.m. that gets me inspired, that provokes me to think differently or take some new action. And like ever since January, when this capability showed up, every morning at 8 a.m., I've been getting these provocations, these new prompts from the AI. So it's like the AI is prompting me, right? So it's kind of this reverse situation. And because I do so much work with ChatGPT, it really knows what I care about, what I'm working on, what I'm focusing on, how I think, how I articulate in language, you know, how I describe the work that I'm doing. And so it's very good at sort of speaking to me like in a way that I really understand and value and resonate with. So that's an example of AI kind of participating on its own and starting to work with me. There's also tools that we've had a few months to get familiar with that are together called Deep Research, right? And so ChatGPT, OpenAI, Gemini, Perplexity, some other tools probably have this capability they call Deep Research, which is a bit more of this kind of delegation capability where, again, you can say, give to the AI a brief, like an assignment or like a brief where, you know, a brand CMO would give to an agency, here's a brief, like here's what we're trying to do with the brand this year, come up with a campaign, or something you might give to an intern or somebody else that reports to you at work, like here's an assignment, you know, I want to learn everything that's happening in the realm of fashion retail over the past 6 months, like what are the new things, just to make something up, right? And then the AI will go off and search the internet, do some thinking, do some reasoning, and then put together a report and come back and then, you know, reference it, let you know its reasoning steps, you know, how it sourced the information and so on. So these are a couple different examples of how AI is moving into a much more active role, much more of a participatory role. The one other thing I would say is that I think everyone can relate to is, and most people I think have had this experience a little bit, it's very easy and basic to just use ChatGPT like we use Google, right, to just get a quick answer or find something. What's much more interesting is treat it like a thought partner, right, where, you know, I want to write an article for a magazine or for LinkedIn, or I want to write, you know, maybe I want to write a book, or I want to write a long email to someone that is important to me, or that I, you know, or create a pitch, something like this. And so these AIs are very good at just helping you think through your ideas. Because often, like, you know, we have an idea, but it's not fully clear, right? And it takes a while of just working with the idea to figure it out. So these are three different examples of where AI can become much more active in our work.
And in your visions, like, what is the maturity level of the companies in the use of AI nowadays?
It's so early days. It's really, you know, a statistic that I'm shocked by, honestly. I heard an interview with Google's chief economist last week, and he said only 6% of companies are using AI in their core business at this point. Now, this doesn't count. I mean, of course, most employees at companies are using ChatGPT or Claude or something like this, you know, just to do whatever they do. But this is about how many companies are actually integrating generative AI, large language models into their core workflows, their core business, right? Only 6%. So it's still very early. And you know, it's great to see companies like Todos, you know, really lean in and start to roll out these agents as they did yesterday that are ready to use to help people, you know, really start getting comfortable with the idea of giving AI an assignment and letting it go do what it's going to do and then come back with a result. I mean, because that's that requires trust, right? It requires a kind of comfort, right? That it's a little strange, honestly, the first time you do this, but it's the same kind of thing as you hire someone just out of college, like an intern, right? And say, here's an assignment, go away and do this. And you know that this person doesn't have all the knowledge you have, right? Doesn't have the access to say all the rules and principles or procedures of your business. And so they're going to come back with something that isn't quite right. And then you have to like,
just check and everything.
Check and then give them some more guidance. And then they go off again and do and make it better. Same thing is happening with AI now. So it's really useful to think of AI as this kind of smart intern, you know?
Yeah, it's your intern, not your boss, isn't it?
Yeah, for now. I think, you know, maybe someday I think people will have AI bosses. But yeah, for now, I mean, it's, and I think what's great is that, you know, these AI companies are actually, they understand how disruptive this technology is. And so, and I think TOTVS is doing the same thing. It's sort of like a slow rollout of these new capabilities to allow people to get comfortable, right? Because just like, even if you're in a company and rolling out a new enterprise software suite, whatever it is, it changes how people work, right? And so it's, and we're such creatures of habit, you know, that any new software that we have to use every day or any new way of working is, makes us uncomfortable, right? It's just change. And so it's important for these things to actually, for the big companies that are rolling them out for corporate use to, you know, do what they're doing to make it easier and easier for people to just get used to them over time.
Yeah. You know? Listen to you, I'm thinking like there is a cultural paradigm like that is changing. And how can you teach people or how can the companies organize this process of change the workforce, you know, because people are like used to work in a different way. So there is a lack of knowledge. And how can you make that happen? And especially in Brazil, that we are a country that we are still like struggling, like teaching people how to work in technology. We still have problems with connection and a lot of things. So how can you make that happen inside the companies in the way that you not lose this opportunity of taking the advantage of AI?
Yeah, it's a great question. The thing that I always say to leaders, and I even said it in my talk this morning, is that it's just, it's really important for even the C-suite. I mean, even the leaders of companies, they're not going to be building the technology. They're probably not going to be building the agents, but they need to have an understanding, you know, a strategic understanding, executive level understanding of what this technology can do in order to be able to lead a company that evolves into this era where AI starts to be, you know, like an employee, you know, like workers on teams. And and really the only way for executives or anybody to have an understanding, strategic or otherwise, is to actually use these tools, right? And the great news is that the capabilities that we're talking about here are really relevant, actually, to executives, right? I mean, I mentioned even this role of a chief of staff, which any, you know, CEO, any C-suite person will have, right? AI is already at the point where it can start to take on some of these capabilities of a chief of staff. And so being able to kind of interface or collaborate with an AI as your chief of staff or like that high level kind of collaborator, if you're an executive, is already available. And so the opportunity, and really there's a need, you know, in order for companies to evolve, for executives, for leaders to have an understanding of this and not just say it's someone else's problem or it's IT or the CTO, you know, it's really for leadership as well. And I guess the other thing I would say, everything that I've been experiencing in Brazil, from the first time I was meeting many Brazilians at South by Southwest to, you know, the number of trips I've had here and at Universal TOTVS, there's so much enthusiasm for technology, right? There's a real passion, I feel, among Brazilians for what's new, what's coming, how to use technology. I keep seeing statistics that Brazil is like the most online culture besides China, I think, right? But Brazil is very close in terms of like how much online usage. So there's definitely, as you're pointing to, there are challenges around access, right? And some amount of income is required for people to have the ability to be connected to the internet. I think the great news is that if you have a phone, if you have a smartphone, and you have the ability to even have any kind of connectivity, some kind of cell phone internet plan, you can access these tools, right? So the cost is very low, compared to what it, you know, what it used to be, right? And anybody could access these tools for free on a smartphone, essentially, which is amazing. So I think there's an opportunity for just about everybody to be able to use these tools with a bit of some help that's needed from government policy or other kinds of ways to make sure that people have access. But
do you think like small business or even medium business can like benefit from AI or in which way?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, again, it's important for people to have direct experience themselves with these tools. Like just keep it simple. Just, you know, try ChatGPT, you know, try talking to it like it's a coworker and start having conversations about the kinds of things that you do in your work or the kinds of things that are important to you in your life. And I mean, I guarantee that if you spend enough time with these tools, exploring how they can actually help you. You can even just ask, like, I'm trying to do this. This is part of my job. How can you help me do this? And ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini will actually tell you, like, this is what I can do. This is how I can help you. Would you like me to do this? Would you like me to do that? I mean, and so, you know, often people say, you know, give yourself 10 hours, and this might be over a few days, like maybe you take a couple hours a day, but if you have a particular kind of job that you do, give yourself 10 hours to interact with one of these AI models and just talk about, like, how can you help me do this? Let's try working on this. 10 hours is enough to really understand what's possible with the current state of that model. And then it's going to get even more powerful a few weeks or months from now, because that's how fast these things are evolving, you know? So that's what I would encourage people to do is just use them. I mean, they're so easy to access. I mean, if you have a phone and if you have internet connectivity on it, you can use these tools.
And is there like some specific skill or something that you think like is the most important thing that you should like stimulate for people that are using AI? For example, I'm listening to you and think, oh, if everyone do this, but not like check after if the answers are right or not, or not, I like kind of criticizing what is coming, it can be like a disaster because sometimes it's not that right or even need something because you don't fill up an information or whatever. But I don't know, there are other skills or things that you think is important to pay attention in this process.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so there's this term hallucination, right? That we've heard for a couple of years that these models hallucinate, which is just kind of a, I don't know, a softer way of saying that they just tell you stuff that's not true, right? I mean, they'll say things that sound very confident,
yeah.
But they're just not true. They're not factual. They're not accurate.
They don't like to say that I don't know.
No,
that's
I mean,
the problem, isn't
well,
it?
It's true. Well, and this is true of some people as well, right?
Exactly.
I mean, like, because we don't want to seem like we don't know. So it's funny. It's people don't want to seem like they don't know, and AI is kind of the same. There's a lot of similarities, really, between how AIs operate and how humans operate. And it's not a surprise because of how they're designed, how they're architected. I mean, basically what these LLMs, these large language models do, they do what they do because they've been trained on human media, human text, right? Things humans have written, humans have created. So they've really learned how to behave like humans. But in terms of like how to deal with the falsehoods, right, the inaccuracies and so on, absolutely, it's one of the biggest, most important topics in AI is the importance of us as humans using AI continuing to bring critical thinking, you know, and not just say, oh, the ChatGPT said it, so it must be true. But I mean, we've had 20 plus years of the internet, right? I mean, you find something on the internet, it doesn't mean it's true, right? It's just like somebody said it. So like we have to deal with things that are false claims all the time in the world, right? And so, I mean, it is a real challenge that AI is so good at persuading. Like it can be very, very convincing the way it describes something, right? And so, yes, it's still very, very important for humans to bring critical thinking, to bring skepticism, right? Like, I'm not just make sure that what you get from the AI is actually correct or useful or usable in the context that you want to use it in. But there's not really a simple answer to this in the sense that, I mean, in the world generally, even separate from AI, you know, if we're raising children, it's really important for them to think critically, right? And not just accept everything that people tell them, right? But just like say, is that really true? Like I should investigate. So yeah, that's maybe a long answer for, you know, to say there's not an easy answer, I think, to this question.
And when we are talking about AI, and especially in business, we are talking a lot about efficiency and how can you work less or cut like time or whatever to do better or more. But it's a lot about efficiency. But what else is this like in this AI revolution, in this new wave? Because we are kind of changing a lot of things in the way that we structure the society, the work and everything. And what the impact of this, apart from the business, the efficiency on the business? Are we changing the way that we work? Are we changing the way that we do business and people consumers? So what else you see?
Well, I mean, I think I'm reminded again of the Google chief economist saying like only 6% of what companies are doing uses AI at this point, right? So we're still very early days. I think, you know, in my talk, I talk about AI as it's reminding us of the discovery of fire, in that after humans discovered fire and learned how to harness it, how to manage it, it was unimaginable at the time, like that we would have, you know, all these centuries later, gasoline-powered cars or like coal-powered electricity plants that power a whole city, or, you know, all these things that are related to the discovery of fire. And I think in the future, maybe the not too distant future, we're going to see like what changes to our society, how we live, you know, what civilization is like, what changes result from AI. I think most of these we can hardly even imagine yet. But I think a simple way to describe or answer your question is, if we think of intelligence, you know, the kind of intelligence that we have ourselves, where we can, you know, we can do math, we can reason through problems, we can look at a situation and think, oh, if this happens, that will probably happen. You know, the sort of common human reasoning that we use, all of that intelligence is now available as a service, we could say, right, in the software that we're calling these AI models. And so more and more, like, we're already at a place where these AI models are as good as the best humans at just about everything humans do, whether it's passing a law exam or, you know, playing chess. Of course, computers got better than humans at chess like 20 years ago, right? Just about everything humans do that is related to intelligence, these AI models can already do that well or better, right? So what does that mean for humans, right? I mean, a really important conversation is, well, what are we in addition to this intelligence, right? And I think we know that we are a lot more than just the ability to think critically and do math and understand cause and effect and do science. Like, these are things we value. But what's really at the core of being human, I think, is a question that is going to keep coming up in the next months and years, right? Like, what do we really care about the most as humans? You know, the Industrial Revolution meant that even though humans can, I don't know, like push plows or, you know, run machines, like we have steam, we have diesel, we have whatever else. And now humans don't need to do so much physical labor, right? Even though humans can run farms and grow vegetables and all these things, you know, we don't really need humans to do that so much anymore, right? And so over time, right, new technologies always start to take on some of the things that we do as humans and then leave us with the space of, what do I do now? Like, what do I want to do now? You know, maybe I need some new job, right? So the Industrial Revolution meant like lots of farmers stopped farming and they went to work in a factory, right? maybe that's not an improvement, but it is a change. And I think what we're seeing emerging now over the coming 5-10 years, especially, is, yeah, I think there's a lot of people who do intelligence related work, knowledge work is often how we talk about it, where that work will start to be taken over by AI. And then the question is, what do these people do? It's a little scary. I think it's also exciting because I think so many of us have grown up with this idea of, you know, like, what do we tell our children? Like, you got to study, you got to go to school, you got to learn to do something and get a job, right? So you can do that job. And like, that's the point of your life. Like, that's the central focus of your life, is like, you get good at doing something and then you have to do this job for the rest of your life, right? Even if the jobs change.
Mm-hmm.
But what if this next era of human existence, the question is not like, what job can you do, but like, what really excites you? Like, what are you really passionate about? Like, what do you, like, I don't know, what's the poetry in you? What's the music in you? You know, like, what really turns you on? You know, and I think that between AI and robotics and all of the technologies that are emerging now, like, and I know that people have talked about this for a long time, you know, throughout the 20th century, there was many people who said, you know, humans won't have to work at all. And like, there'll be nothing for us to do except just relax, you know, and be on the beach, right? We'll all go to Rio, right? But I think we're at the point where a lot of this may really be happening in our lifetime. And it will mean that we have to reorganize how we share wealth, right? How we redistribute income, how we support each other.
And reorganize the society in a way that can be, make it happen.
I don't know. I think it's exciting, though, too, because, I don't know, and especially in Brazil, right? Because I think there's just so much of a sense of community and warmth and caring for each other. I think Brazil especially is really well set up as a country to navigate this new revolution.
And in which way?
Well, I think, you know, my sense is people really care for each other. There's a lot of warmth and compassion. And also, you know, I was speaking with Dennis, the Toto CEO, earlier today. And he was just speaking to, you know, how nearly self-sufficient Brazil is because of its size, its diversity. You know, it has natural resources. It has land, you know, to produce food, coffee, very important, right?
a great one.
But also oil, great, right? I mean, kind of everything, right? Yeah. I mean, and so given that, it's a very resourced and resourceful, and I think naturally wealthy country, you know, and so there is the possibility. I feel like Brazil has what it needs in order to move into this new era with the right policies, you know, with the right approach to sharing wealth and so on. I think, you know, I mostly live in the USA. I think Brazil is in a better place. You know, USA is just so much like internal conflict right now that people sharing with each other seems much more difficult. But anyway, maybe this is just my outsider perspective on Brazil. I feel like Brazil is in a great place.
And when you look to other emerging technologies or the technology field in a more broad perspective, what else do you think like is coming or is right now and people should pay attention? Is all about AI or there are other things?
Yeah. I mean, it's important, I think, to try to remember that AI, very soon, we're not even going to be talking about AI like it's a separate thing. You know, just like people don't say, you know, I'm going to go online.
Yeah, I'll use the internet.
Or I'm going to use the internet. Or
electricity.
We don't talk about electricity. We don't talk about digital even almost, right? I mean, it's like digital transformation was this whole era that's taken like the last 20 years or something, right? But AI is just going to be part of everything. It's going to be assumed. And so at the same time, just like electricity, just like the internet, just like digital technology, AI will make it possible to do everything that we do in the future, right? But if we were to separate from AI and talk about other technologies, I mean, robotics, I spent a moment in my talk talking a bit about robotics. There's this, it still seems crazy to me that, I mean, so many big tech companies, right? Tesla and NVIDIA and even OpenAI and various other companies, lots of Chinese companies, are talking about humanoid robots, right? Meaning robots that are about the same kind of size and structure, have two arms, two legs, you know, they work sort of like humans. And like Elon Musk, for example, is talking about like people are going to have one or more of these robots in their home by 2030. Most people are going to have at least one of these robots. I mean, he's notoriously like over-promising and it takes longer, but already you can buy a humanoid robot from many Chinese companies that does a lot of what you need to do around the home. I say this crazy because I don't think I'm ready to have, like, I'm okay with a vacuum cleaning robot that just runs on the floor, but like a robot that's my size and that does, you know, does things with its hands and walks around. I don't know. Anyway, this technology is basically there. I mean, it's highly capable already, largely thanks to AI, you know? And of course, manufacturing of the motors and all the other things. So robotics and autonomous vehicles are finally, after many years of talking about them, are finally becoming real. In the US, there's a few cities that you can use your Uber app and get an autonomous vehicle, come pick you up. And so that's being normalized now. So robotics, I think, in addition to AI, is a huge realm. You know, also the coming few years, we're going to see, I think, starting next year, glasses that are like this, but that allow us to see digital things in our physical space. You know, we've called it augmented reality or mixed reality for a long time. But, you know, I mean, if we look around, it's soon going to be possible for I'm looking at this and this can, you and I can both see it, but it's actually a digital thing that we're seeing because of the glasses that we're wearing. So next year, Meta, Google, Apple, most likely are going to all, and many other companies are going to be releasing glasses that are connected to the internet. You can have an all day constant conversation with AI. You can already do this with Meta's Ray-Bans. And then also start to place digital objects in the physical world alongside our physical objects, right? So this is, I mean, even for me as a near futurist, as a technologist, like it's the amount of change that all these things together are going to be creating is just staggering. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it looks like a science fiction.
It's like all of these things are starting to happen, it feels like almost at the same time. And like AI has been a pursuit, you know, humans have been engaging in since at least the 1950s, right? So we've had AI research and AI, like early forms of AI since then. So it's almost, you know, over 60 years. Augmented reality, virtual reality, same kind of thing, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm getting old enough. I feel like that I feel more drawn to like, I might just want to go be a farmer, like, you know, be out in the, you know, out in nature. I have a friend that came from New York City and married a Brazilian woman, and he's got a farm outside Porto Alegre, and I haven't been there yet, but it looks amazing, looks beautiful. But he's also doing a lot of like crypto development work. So it's an interesting way to kind of have this balance of being close to nature, but also,
yeah,
you know, connected to all the new tech. So that's probably the next phase of my life. Like maybe less time in New York City and more time in, I don't know.
And that's a really contemporary feeling, isn't it? Like, it's too much. Maybe I don't want to be part anymore. So I want to like be in a farm. I want to relax and I want to be disconnected.
Yeah, touch ground. Right?
A lot of grass, people saying that the real luxury nowadays is be disconnected.
Yeah.
So I don't know. At the same time, things are going super fast. But actually, a lot of people are kind of resisting because I don't know, like, is it necessary to have all of these? Can we design a system that we can include everyone? So what do you see? Like, because at the same time, there are a lot of risks, aren't they? So
yeah. There are. I mean, it's not as, how would I say? I mean, one of the things I think is just clearly true is that humans are curious, humans are driven to like anything humans can imagine, you know, humans are going to figure out how to do it, right? So if I feel like over time, we're just going to do whatever is possible to do. And more, like, especially given how, you know, we can say how small the world is, right? How many of us there are, how sort of like interconnected we all are. The risks do seem greater of like massive, you know, things massively going wrong. We are having lots of conversations, I think. Not much more than conversations, but I mean, it about how do we put in place the right guardrails, right? The right safety measures so that AI, so that autonomous vehicles, so that robots, you know, don't cause lots of damage. I mean, autonomous vehicles are a great example. Like they've been to allow autonomous vehicles to like be called by an Uber app and show up and take you somewhere in a crowded city like San Francisco or like Austin. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, if anyone actually got hurt or killed, you know, by an autonomous vehicle making a mistake, like the whole industry would shut down for a while, right? Because so they have to be very, very careful. And so far, they are being careful, right? I mean, sometimes there are accidents, but, you know, no one's been physically hurt yet, I think. Nothing really big and disastrous has happened yet as a result of AI. I mean, no doubt it will at some point. But I don't know. I think, how would I say? I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful that as humans, like we'll continue to figure out how to put in the right guardrails, the right places. You know, I mean, as difficult and tragic as it was, COVID, you know, it was amazing that humans were able to come together and create vaccines like way faster than anyone thought was possible before that because it was necessary, you know? And I think that, you know, even though humans make a mess of a lot of things and cause lots of damage, I think when things are really, really important that we do come together to solve them, you know? So I think we'll do the same kind of thing with AI. Now, I mean, is it really necessary that we have all this tech? No, but I think because it's possible, it's going to happen, you know? It's possible and there's money to be made, right? So, I mean,
And for a country like Brazil, it's a big opportunity, isn't it? Like to kind of make better business and be more competitive. So I think like then I agree with you. We are in a great position to make like better business. So
I think that's true. I think there's an opportunity to have to be more even more competitive on the global level. One thing I'm thinking about right now that's really a huge benefit of AI that I think almost everybody could agree is I can have complex conversations with people who speak no English here because I'm
Exactly.
using, you know, real-time translation, ChatGPT or Google Translate or something. And this is amazing. Like, I mean, it's slower than a real conversation like you and I are having, but, you know, 2 years ago, it wasn't even possible,
Exactly. You
you
can
know?
have meetings with a person in another language and kind of work better.
Like, just the last month or two, you know, big tech companies have announced that, and including Apple, like in its next operating system, like, you can actually have a voice call on your phone
Exactly.
and it does real-time translation. I can speak English, you can speak Portuguese. And then you hear me speaking in Portuguese and I hear you speaking in English. This is huge, right? I mean, for human communication, I think, and this wouldn't be happening without AI. So, you know, it's kind of moving to me because I feel like communication is what makes it possible for humans who are different to get along, you know? And I think maybe not all of this stuff is necessary. Maybe no one needs augmented reality glasses that put digital things in the space, but like we all need to communicate, and being able to communicate better is a real benefit.
And access like resources in another language, that for us that comes in a country that don't speak English, it's huge also because you could like find something, for example, in English on the Google, you could put in the Google Translator and you could check. But now with like ChatGPT and other like AI tools, you can just like find the resource all translated super quickly. So that's like you can open to so much content that you couldn't access easily that mm-hmm. can make a lot of difference.
It's content, but also, you know, more and more it's possible for one or two people plus the internet and now plus language translation to have a business that has customers everywhere around the world that speaks exactly. different languages. You know, you can offer products, you can offer, content, you can offer digital services and have it all be translated into the right language for whoever is your customer. This is amazing, right? And so yeah, you can actually have make a living, you can make enough money to live well with a global customer base with a very small business, you know?
Yeah.
Thanks to anybody can read your product page or buy your products, buy your content in their language. So I don't know. That's exciting.
Yeah, that it is. I feel the same. And come back into like business and people who are like behind the business in Brazil. What do you think, like, is there a step-by-step that you could share for people, apart from the idea that, like, exploring the tools and everything, but looking to the business itself, is there something that you think, like, it's a real nice process to kind of include or test, implement something inside the company or something that is important to pay attention or the key point or the first one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would go back to what I was saying earlier about thought partnership, right? I mean, so much of, you know, even though only 6% of businesses are really using AI in their core operations, I mean, I think the majority of people, or a large percentage of people will say, who in their daily work will make PowerPoint decks or write documents or, create email pitches or things like this are already using or can use, should be using these AI tools as thought partners to help them build that content, help them think through what am I not thinking of? You know, what's missing here? How can I make this better? And that kind of thought partnership with AI is definitely the place to start for everybody. Because again, it's just what's most important is to get a feel, like a direct understanding of how these technologies work. Now, if you're thinking about like what, I don't know, what software or what workflows or practices, I think that's really going to depend on the kind of company you are. I think, you know, TOTA's customers, I think, are well served by really leaning in and paying attention to what TOTA's is now offering in terms of these new agents to start to get a sense of what it feels like to use a technology that can actually go off and be given an assignment and do some reasoning, do some research, use some tools, and then come back and deliver a result, right? That's a different way of working. And it sounds like not business language to say what it feels like, but there is something to what it feels like to work with a human and what it feels like to work with an agent. It's a bit different and it's a bit similar. And so these are two areas that I think every business, I strongly encourage, you know, to really adopt these behaviors. I think leaders really need to, yeah, I'll say one more thing because, you know, I hear often that a lot of companies actually have policies either like employees are forbidden, like they're not allowed to use AI. And so that's definitely a recipe for, failure. You know, it's not going to work for your company because your competitors are using it. But it's important for leadership to actually create a clear agenda for how people should use AI within a company, encourage them, talk about how, you know, it's okay. In fact, we encourage you to describe how you're using AI to do your job. I think a lot of people are afraid that if they use AI and they realize AI could do their job, then they're going to lose their job. So maybe they don't want to talk about using AI.
Concerns about data and the privacy.
There's also that, like proprietary data. I mean, companies, there are ways to solve that though, right? I mean, like You know, ChatGPT, for example, a lot of big companies I talk to have access to ChatGPT Enterprise Edition. Maybe Totus does as well, right? Where it's like a specific offering from OpenAI that makes sure that company proprietary data remains private and secret and encrypted. So there's that. But I mean, I think executives really, leaders really need to be explicit with employees about this is how we want you to use AI. These are things you can do. It's okay. Like, we encourage you to use this and talk about it. And then it also is important for them to say, like, yeah, you're not just going to lose your job because you're using AI, right? I mean, like we talked earlier, there are jobs that are going to be shifting. And that is important for companies to be as clear as possible, you know, about when that's going to happen and what the impact is going to be on employees. We talked a little bit about that yesterday in my conversation at Totus offices with Nana in HR. But it's always much better, again, to be in communication with employees about, like, this is what's happening. This is what the company is doing around AI. You know, we encourage you to use it. We want you to discover and share, like, new ways of using it. And make it clear that they actually will be rewarded, you know, for doing that, not punished, you know?
Yeah, not like wait, all solved to build policies around, isn't it? So maybe we can experiment together and see what is going to happen instead. Yep. Wait to find answers for all the things that we are thinking that can be wrong or risks or whatever to start to build policies and things inside companies.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's really good. So we are kind of arriving our time. So I would like to ask you the final question. There is something that you would like to share with our audience, something that you learned here with the Brazilians or whatever you want to like say to everyone that is listening to us.
Mm. So two things. I don't know if I said this earlier, but every day here I'm in Brazil, I learn some new phrase. And this week, actually, my favorite new one is tudo no passa. Because I kept saying to people, like, they'd be like, sorry, or desculpa, and I was like, no faz mal, right? But then someone said to me, just say tudo no passa. And I'm like, I love this. It's just, it's all peaceful, right? So thank you for that phrase, because it's a beautiful one. The other thing I would say in line with the work I do as a near futurist is really that, you know, and I'm almost quoting the young John Connor in the second Terminator movie here, but, you know, the future is not set. Like, there's no fate but what we make for ourselves. And, you know, I talk about in my talk how reality, even our current present reality, is not something that's just separate from us. Like, we actually actively participate in co-creating it. And so I want to leave people with that awareness and confidence, that just recognize that the future, all this technology, is not something that's just happening to you, that you actually get to participate and help say how it goes. And with AI, I think the important thing is to engage with it like it's a new person that showed up on your team, or a new like a baby that showed up in your house, and it's a new family member or a new dog or something like this, right? It's like, it's here now. We're going to be living with this like it's a new species, and let's get to know it. Let's welcome it. Let's learn how to be friends with it, how to work well with it, how to have a good relationship. And I think if we do that, then the future that we co-create with this technology is going to be a beautiful one.
Oh, really good. It was really nice to listen to you. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
E você que ficou até aqui, não deixa de compartilhar, seguir o podcast, seguir a Totus nas redes. E você pode também ouvir todos os episódios anteriores em podcast.totus.com. É isso aí. Muito obrigada a todo mundo e até a próxima. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you so much.